Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting
up soon in the morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk in depth about how our diet influences our genes. Some good research from Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, a study from Shandong University Institute of Preventive Medicine in China, when they showed that when they looked at 29,000 children and adolescents, that, wow, their lifestyle, the American lifestyle, is killing those kids. I'll explain why. It's true all over the world. Also, we're going to look at no time to get fit. I hear it all the time. Think again. From McMaster University up in Canada, a new study. And they say that intense exercise produces health benefits, but how long do you have to do that intense exercise? I'll share that. Then yoga can be healthy for asthma, from the Cochrane Collaboration of Scientists. And chronic inflammation, which most people have, leads to an imbalanced blood system, which is not good because that increases your cancer risk. University of Colorado in their cancer center. And what can we do to reverse that? Also, vitamin D insufficiency, meaning too little vitamin D, creates a low rate of DNA methylation in black teens. That means that if you don't have enough vitamin D in your black teen, you can end up with serious illness. That's in the Medical College of Georgia. Also, we're going to look at chronically ill for years, but you don't know why. You go to the doctor, they examine you, they can't find it. You don't have hepatitis, you don't have chronic fatigue syndrome, you don't have adrenal exhaustion, you don't have liver disease, you don't have the non-alcoholic liver disease. Then what's wrong? Could be aspartame poisoning. I'll tell you what the symptoms are, and they're now identifying it as a big condition. I had someone come over a couple days ago when I was doing a lecture. A person said, I want to look at you real close. I said, why? Well, because I saw a photograph of you on a book that I bought a long time ago and called The Complete Handbook of Nutrition, and I just wanted to see how your skin is aged. Now, I'm under a very bright light, no makeup. I don't wear makeup when I'm in public venues. It's just what it is. And the person's looking at my skin, then a couple other people look and say, you don't have any wrinkles. No, I don't have wrinkles. Your skin's tight. Yes, it's tight. Well, how'd that happen? So I went on to do another hour lecture just on how people can have healthier, wrinkle-free skin. Even if you have wrinkles, you can remove them. I explain how. But I'm going to give you one piece of the puzzle today, but it's a good piece, about the amazing healing powers to your skin of, I'll let you know what that is when we get to it. Then today, we're going to have some audio clips, and one of those audio clips is hopefully going to motivate you to think deeper on some issues of life. And this is about the unified soul theory. I think you'll find it provocative. War on boys. Whatever happened to letting boys be boys? So those are the issues that we're going to address. Let's begin. We have a lot to share today. First up, we're going to look at the latest on health and healing. And I'm going to begin with a study of our DNA. And I'll keep it all in lay language. It doesn't have to be scientific in its explanation to be understood. What we eat does directly affect the genetic programs that regulate cellular function. Now, this is according to a new European Union project coordinated by the Ludwig Maximilian University. And the incidence of chronic illness, we're talking about obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure, has already reached alarmingly high levels, often collectively referred to as metabolic syndrome. And these disorders are ultimately attributable to problems in biochemical metabolism. And all are caused by a combination of lifestyle factors. Unbalanced diet, meaning you're eating too many foods that are acidic, processed, meat-based, allergic, like allergies to dairy and wheat and corn, refined carbohydrates, sugar, what the average person in America eats. That's an unbalanced diet. But it is also influenced by genetics. And genes do not rigidly determine how an organism processes its food. On the contrary, new research, recent evidence indicates that intermediates produced during the biochemical reactions involved in the breakdown of nutrients can themselves have an impact on gene regulation. Indeed, cells can actually be reprogrammed by such substances. Quote from the study, "Much of what we eat is directly converted into metabolic products that play a part in controlling the action of our genes." This is according to the professor who works in the biomedical center. Now, what does that mean? The genomic DNA carried by each cell encodes the information necessary for the synthesis of the different proteins produced by a given tissue and organ. In higher organisms, the hereditary material resides in the cell's nucleus in a compact form known as the chromatin, which results from the interaction of the long DNA molecules with a set of proteins called the histones. Now, I don't want to go any further on that level. Let me just try to make it real simple. Let's say that you're eating consciously with the intent, through mindful meditation, to eat something that will actually help your body. Here's what happens. The very fact that you are getting a message from your gut bacteria that has over 100 million neurons, more than you have in your spine, and your central nervous system, second only to your brain. That means your gut has a brain, and it communicates. The brain in the gut communicates the brain in your skull. So it's saying, I want to be healthier. I want to have food come into my body that actually nourishes these good bacteria and allows nutrients that can help the DNA. That very intent to do right means that you're going to be actively looking, maybe going to a farmer's market, maybe going to an organic produce stand, looking for fresher produce. Now that you have that fresh organic produce and you're preparing it, maybe juicing it, and you're thinking, okay, I heard Gary say that the highest level of nutrition comes from juices. And if we're getting more organic juices, we're getting the highest vibration, the highest concentration of life force energy. He says that the way he helps people heal many conditions is by giving them the number 9 or 10 on a scale of 10. That would be your juices, your sprouts, your living foods, organic, and concentrating it. And when you juice it, you concentrate it. So you're giving more than what you would get if you ate. Now, all that's intent. That's what you want. I want to reverse this disease. I want to improve my condition. I want to live longer. Your gut is telling your brain what it needs. Your brain is then telling you, make this effort. Now, you're making that effort, and you're actually doing something really good. So then when you take in the food, and it's healthy food, and you're taking it in and relaxed, you're not stressed, you're enjoying it, you're taking your time, you're not overeating, you're eating what your body needs, all of that encodes in your DNA. Hence, your genes directly go from producing a disease to producing wellness. And each and every time you do this, you reinforce the good habits. So as long as you can stay disciplined, as long as you can stay away from the bad foods and pay attention to the good things, in time, your body reverses disease. So when people think, oh, gee whiz, this is like a miracle. It's not a miracle when a person goes from ill health to well health. It's because they make good choices. Now we know that the DNA plays a very important part of that, and you can change your genes. But just the opposite is also true. If you're frustrated, you're angst-ridden, you're angry, you're feeling like a victim, or you're taking on the position of a martyr, then you're going to eat martyr food. You're going to eat victim food. And that's always going to be the worst things you could possibly put in your body. For some people, it's alcohol. Other people, it's drugs. Other people, it's tranquilizers. Other people, it's fast food. It's sugar. It's colas. It's late-night ice cream. But what you've told yourself is you no longer value your life. You no longer value the cells. You no longer are valuing healthy bacteria. You're engaged in a free fall into disease. But you're also telling the DNA that. And the DNA can turn on or off epigenetically. And now we know there's an on for healing and there's an off for diseasing. So what at one time was just a very esoteric existential construct, it was purely a theory, a hypothesis, no solid grounding. Now there is tons of scientific evidence that when you're conscious and positive and put very positive things in your body, your DNA responds, heals, and changes. That's the lay part of it. A study from Shandong University in China, published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, shows that China is paying a price for adopting a Western lifestyle with soaring childhood obesity. In fact, it shows a 29-year study of almost 28,000 plus children and adolescents that 1% or less were obese in 1985. Today, it's 17%. And, quote, this is extremely worrying, says Professor Perk, the cardiovascular spokesperson for the European Society of Cardiology. It is the worst explosion of childhood and adolescent obesity that I have ever seen. This study is large and well-run and cannot be ignored. China is set for an escalation of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. The popularity of the Western diet will cost lives. Okay, that's bad. I just got the latest study on the United States. In China, it's 17%. Here, it's 33%. It's almost double. We have an epidemic of overweight and obese children in the United States. So we're going to have an awful lot of heart disease, stroke in teenagers and people in their 20s. Not good. And from McMaster's University, researchers have found this. They found that a single 60-second very intense exercise produces health benefits similar to longer traditional endurance training. Now, I've been seeing a lot of studies on this, so the findings put to rest the common excuse for not getting into shape. Oh, I don't have enough time. And yes, you do. So even if you did a strong burst of intense exercise, you can have remarkable, effective outcomes. So that way, everyone has 60 seconds a day. Of course, now if you did more than 60 seconds, that's great. They're suggesting about 10 minutes. I'm suggesting an hour, and then breaking the hour up so you can do intense and non-intense, intense and non-intense. There's a difference between ideal fitness and just being able to have some benefits. And there's new research that shows that yoga helps people with asthma. And asthma is a big problem. 300 million people worldwide have it. So do 20 minutes of yoga a day, and that could help. And we're finding from University of Colorado, as published in Nature Cell Biology, that chronic exposure to an inflammatory emergency signal, what is called interleukin-1, causes blood-forming bone marrow stem cells to produce cells needed to fight infection and repair injury, but at the expense of their own ability to self-renew and maintain a healthy blood system. This results in overproduction of aggressive immune cells capable of severely damaging tissues. So, in lay language, what this means is when you eat inflammatory items, when you drink inflammatory beverages, coffee, alcohol, these energy drinks and your sugared soft drinks, you are producing chronic inflammation that imbalances your blood system and makes you at greater risk of cancer. Drink healthy items, green teas, lemonade, any form of natural fruit, that's all good. And finally, from the Medical College of Georgia, vitamin D insufficiency, meaning when you're low in it, causes low rate of DNA methylation in black teens. In lay language, what this means is that when you do not have enough vitamin D in your body, then you cannot control the gene expression, and that increases your risk of cancer and other diseases. So make sure that you're getting vitamin D. I suggest about 3,000 units a day, and that way you can help lessen your likelihood of cancer. And from the science journals dealing with aspartame, now we're finding that people end up having a concept that they're just not well. But it's not like they have a heart attack or stroke or cancer, something you can define and be diagnosed with. You don't have that energy. You don't feel fit. And now they're looking at aspartame and chronic aspartame use, which is diet sodas, there you are. They found that 32 hours later after consuming that, she ended up with all forms of inabilities to walk and she had muscle spasms, she had no energy, and this is true, fatigue, cramps, inability to sleep, all these are due to that. And aspartame is converted to formaldehyde and then formic acid, which in turn causes metabolic acidosis. In my personal opinion, aspartame is extremely poisonous. And here's why. One of the toxic ingredients of aspartame is wood alcohol. And when the temperature of aspartame exceeds 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the wood alcohol in the aspartame is converted to formaldehyde. And formaldehyde is grouped in the same class of poisons as cyanide and arsenic, which are very deadly toxins. The only difference is formaldehyde kills quietly, and it takes a little longer. And in the process of killing people, it causes all kinds of neurological disorders. So what happens when you've got the soda and it's in the summertime and it's in your car and you're drinking it, but the temperature's gotten up? And what about all that soda that we send to people in Afghanistan and Iraq, American troops, and it's in the desert? You forget about that. Think of all the places in America that it's hot a lot of time. People don't realize those Diet Cokes could be poisoning you. And one last mention, just about how you can have healthier skin. Of all the ingredients I would recommend, I'm just going to take one today, and that's aloe vera. There are thousands of studies on aloe vera, and dealing with the skin, aloe is proven to help the skin. There's been a lot of studies showing that when you drink it orally, it helps you. When you put it on your face, it helps with the wrinkles. And generally, you take in around a low dose, would be 1,200 milligrams or 1 gram a day. I suggest around 3 to 4 grams a day to get some benefits. It helps you with psoriasis. I've seen a Swedish study that found that aloe vera applied topically as a part of a cream in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study of 60 patients with psoriasis, those that received a 0.05% or half of 1% against the placebo had a substantial improvement in psoriasis. Even with cancer of the skin, which is very common, aloe vera may also prevent and treat skin cancer. There was a study done at the University of Belgrade School of Medicine found that aloe vera and its mucopolysaccharides polysaccharides inhibit the skin cell proliferation that accompanies skin cancer. And researchers radiated human skin cells to stimulate sun damage and trigger the process of proliferation that leads to skin tumors. And they found that treating the cells with aloe, imodin, a constituent of aloe, significantly stopped the proliferation process. And then it also helps with periodontal disease. And it's topically, it's very good. And it helps with inflammatory bowel disease and diabetes and wound healing. Very important. By the way, I'm going to be concluding a little effort in the next 3 or 4 days, and I'll put up on my line a daily photograph of a person who had extreme gangrene with extreme sepsis, massive infection, and how I believe within the next 3 days the entire wound would be 100% closed and healed. It's 90% closed and healed right now. How do you do that in 10 days? I'll show you the whole way it was done. It was purely happenstance. Didn't know I'd be meeting someone who had that problem, but I decided to give him some instruction because their only option was amputation, immediate amputation. So there's a lot that can be done to help people. We're going to take a break and come right back. Stay with us. Got a lot to share with you. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world who are tuning in and all the stations who carry us in the United States and Canada. It's much appreciated. This coming Friday, I'm going to do a major special on my noon show. I'm not going to deal with the politics or the economics or the special interest groups involved in the question of vaccines. I'm merely going to share with you from scientists, physicians who have taken a lot of time to read up on vaccines, the two questions: are they safe? Are they effective? And because there are people running around saying, well, we have a couple problematic vaccines like the MMR, but if we space them out, we're all pro-vaccine. And they bend over backwards, keep one foot in the orthodox world and then one foot or one toe in the alternative position of, well, we'd like to see safer vaccines. That's predicated upon accepting unquestionably that vaccines are safe to begin with. And in that question is, you mean so vaccines have been proven safe and effective, and all we have is occasionally we'll find a hot lot or a bad vaccine. So let's just correct that one bad vaccine and then make sure our kids get out there. Well, what that tells me is that the people who are right now advocating for the movie Vax would be the first people to ask your children to go get vaccinated. Well, if that's the case, then my God, have we made some serious judgment problems here. And in which case, I'm going to make a major correction on that on Friday's show. If you have the capacity to find that a vaccine's dangerous, then you also have the same capacity to find out that there's neither safety nor efficacy proven for any given individual for any given vaccines. We will have that show. So those of you who want to answer the question once for all, it will be answered once and for all on Friday. The safety net, you won't want to miss that show. Now, wherever you are in America, if you're not near a land-based station, you're not near an internet, let me give you a phone number you can call. You can listen to the show Friday at noon. Call 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. You will not want to miss this show on Friday. We have been working on the science on this, and we will also be posting at that time over 39 articles, plus 3 documentaries for you to watch and share with others. Watch them and share them. And we hope you do that. That's Friday. And I'll be back shortly and premiering in the next 2 months my newest hard-hitting documentary. Brand new, a theme, topic I've never dealt with before in a documentary. And then I got 3 more behind that over the next 9 to 10 months. I've been working on all of them simultaneously. They're all done. They're all in post-production. So that's what I'm up to. Also, I'm going to be doing something unusual. Starting the second Saturday of June, on every other Saturday for 3 months, starting at 3 o'clock and going 3 hours, I'm going to take on the subject of anti-aging. What do I mean? Your brain, helping people who are suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, memory loss, depression, obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, going to deal with all of them. And we're going to give you the newest protocols, things I have not discussed on the air. I'm particularly interested in a whole new concept that I have discovered, and I've been trying it on friends that it works, how to regrow your hair and clean up that skin, tighten it, get rid of the wrinkles. It's doable without surgeries and without all that nonsense. And also how to get your body down to the weight that it ideally should be with your body fat around 12 to 15% instead of 25 to 40% that it is now, to get energy so you have energy all day long and overcome pain, all in 3 months. That's the goal. Let's see if I can do it. So if you want to join me, we have room for only 10 more people, and then we are full. Call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422 if you want to join me on this journey. This is my one and only health support for the next 12 months. Now, let's listen to an interesting clip that hopefully provokes a little deeper insight, the unified soul theory.
You know, the average person spends 4 years of his life looking down at a cell phone. Kind of ironic, ain't it? How these touch screens can make us lose touch. But it's no wonder in a world filled with IMAX, iPads, and iPhones, so many eyes, so many selfies, not enough us's and we's, see? Technology has made us more selfish and separate than ever. Cause while it claims to connect us, connection has gotten no better. And let me express first, Mr. Zuckerberg, not to be rude, but you should reclassify Facebook to what it is, an anti-social network. Cause while we may have big friend lists, so many of us are friendless all alone. Cause friendships are more broken than the screens on our very phones. We sit at home on our computers measuring self-worth by numbers of followers and likes. Ignoring those who actually love us, it seems we'd rather write an angry post than talk to someone who might actually hug us. Am I bugging? You tell me, cause I asked a friend the other day, let's meet up face to face. They said, all right, what time you wanna Skype? I responded with OMG, SRS, and then a bunch of SMHs and realized, what about me? Do I not have the patience to have conversation without abbreviation? This is the generation of media overstimulation. Chats have been reduced to snaps. The news is 140 characters. Videos are 6 seconds at high speed. And you wonder why ADD is on the rise faster than 4G LTE, but... get a load of this. Studies show the attention span of the average adult today is 1 second lower than that of a goldfish. So if you're one of the few people or aquatic animals that have yet to click off or close this video, congratulations. Let me finish by saying you do have a choice, yes. But this one, my friends, we cannot autocorrect. We must do it ourselves. Take control or be controlled. Make a decision, me? No longer do I want to spoil a precious moment by recording it with a phone. I'm just going to keep them. I don't want to take a picture of all my meals anymore. I'm just going to eat them. I don't want the new app, the new software, or the new update. And if I want to post an old photo, who says I have to wait until Thursday? I'm so tired of performing in the pageantry of vanity and conforming to this accepted form of digital insanity. Call me crazy, but... I imagine a world where we smile when we have low batteries. Cause that'll mean we'll be one bar closer to humanity.
That's Prince E. I think there's a lot of relevance to that. See what you could do if you just put down your cell phone. Try this. I never take a cell phone ever with me when I'm with friends or family. Because when I'm with them at that dinner table, I want to be with them in that moment. If we're out exercising, I want to be in that moment exercising and enjoying nature, mindful of the sounds and the smells. If there's a problem, it'll still be there when I get back. If someone's died, they'll still be dead when I get back. And we have to put this all in perspective. Remember when we were kids, we had a chance to grow up. We had a chance to make mistakes. We learned about life from our interactions through play. What happened to that? Let's find out what happened being a little boy. Because there's been a war against little boys, and I believe we have to intervene and stop it. Here's someone who has something to say about war on boys.
Being a normal boy is a serious liability in today's classroom. Boys tend to be disorganized and restless. Some have even been known to be noisy and hard to manage. Sound like any boy you know? But increasingly, our schools have little patience for what only a couple of decades ago would have been described as boyishness. As psychologist Michael Thompson has aptly observed, girls' behavior is the gold standard in schools. Boys are treated like defective girls. Now, as a result, these defective girls are not faring well academically. Compared with girls, boys earn lower grades, they win fewer honors, they're far less likely to go to college. Boys are languishing academically while girls are prospering. In an ever more knowledge-based economy, this is not a recipe for a successful society. We need to start thinking about how we can make our grade school classrooms more boy-friendly. Well, here are four reforms that would make a very good start. One, turn boys into readers. In all age groups, across all ethnic lines, boys score lower than girls on national reading tests. Good reading skills, need I say, are critical to academic and workplace success. A major study in the UK discovered, not surprisingly, that girls prefer fiction, magazines, and poetry, while boys prefer comics and nonfiction. Boys whose eyes glaze over if forced to read Little House on the Prairie may be riveted by the Guinness Book of Records.
Cool.
Boys will read if given materials that interest them. If you're looking for suggestions for books that have proved irresistible to boys, go to guysread.com. Two, inspire the male imagination. Celebrated writing instructor Ralph Fletcher contends that too many teachers take what is called the confessional poet as the classroom ideal. Personal narratives full of emotions and self-disclosure, these are stories girls commonly write, and these are prized, whereas action stories describing, say, a skateboard competition or a monster devouring a city, these are not. I recently read about a third grader in Southern California named Justin, who loved science fiction, pirates, and battles. Well, an alarmed teacher summoned his parents to school to discuss the picture the 8-year-old had drawn of a sword fight, which included several decapitated heads. The teacher expressed grave concern about Justin's values. The boy's father was astonished, not by his son's drawing, which to him was typical boy stuff, but by the teacher's overwrought and female-centered reaction. If boys are constantly subject to disapproval for their interests and enthusiasms, they're likely to become disengaged and lag further behind. Our schools need to work with, not against, the kinetic imaginations of boys. Three, zero out, zero tolerance. Boys are nearly 5 times as likely to be expelled from preschool as girls. And in grades K through 12, boys account for nearly 70% of suspensions. Now, this is often for minor acts of insubordination and sometimes for entirely innocent behavior. Hardly a week goes by without a news story about a young boy running afoul of a school's zero tolerance policy. Josh Welsh, age 7, was recently sent home from his Maryland school for nibbling off the corners of a strawberry Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun. Josh, like many other boys punished for violating zero tolerance policies, was guilty of nothing more than being a typical 7-year-old boy. Four, bring back recess. Believe it or not, recess may soon be a thing of the past. According to research summarized by Science Daily, since the 1970s, school children have lost close to 50% of their unstructured outdoor playtime. And much-loved games have vanished from schoolyards. In schools throughout the country, games like dodgeball, Red Rover, even tag have all but disappeared. Too damaging to self-esteem or too violent being the usual excuse. One popular classroom guide suggests tug of war be replaced with tug of peace. Boys need to work off their energy. They need to be free to play games they enjoy. And keeping them cooped up and inside all day will not help them learn. As our schools become more feeling-centered, more competition-free, more sedentary, they move further away from the needs of boys. We need to reverse the boy-averse trends. Male underachievement is everyone's concern. These are our sons. These are the young men with whom our daughters will build a future. If boys are in trouble, so are we all.
Well,
Christina Hoff Summers.
Okay, now I'd like your feedback. We all, at least everyone over the age of 35, understands that there's a series of crises, not just one, but multiple causes to why a lot of the kids are acting out, a lot of the kids are intellectually and emotionally disconnected. There are some who are very connected, but they're in the minority. What do you see as the primary problems, and why is it we do not look at the economic environment that someone's growing up in? Poverty, and 1 in 5 children in the United States is growing up in poverty, with or without a parent or relative in prison. And when you understand what it is to be poor as a kid and how that stigma alone impacts you, depression, a sense of low self-esteem, you're not of value, you're not held in the same regard, that impacts you. There's a consequence to it. Shouldn't we be also examining that and what we can do to help that, resolve that, intercede with that? What can we do to save the young boys and the young girls in America today? That's our talk back question. I'm only taking answers on that question only today. If you'd like to address that, please do. You can call now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We have, is it Hadalutz from New York? You're on the air.
For many years, and one of the reasons I retired was because of exactly what you're talking about. The boys were considered monsters. They were called all kinds of, I can't even say the names by many people, you know, just terrible names because, yeah, they look out the window, they climb on chairs, and I had what's called an open classroom situation, which was very frowned upon because the kids were on pillows on the floor, they were reading with each other, they were hugging each other, you know, and all this was not acceptable. They were reading all the time to each other out loud, they were acting out stuff, so I did not have a normal or so-called normal classroom. It was advised that children be recommended for drugging, as I called it, which, again, people corrected me all the time, and I continue to say drugging. And I'm glad to say, Gary, that in all the years I taught, 35 years, I didn't have a single kid drugged that was ever in my class because I really fought it. And I won't get into how, but it was quite a battle. But, you know, every time I won, and I won over the parents as a result so that they agreed with me. But, you know, kids, especially boys, they got to be outdoors. And scouting is one of the things that I would constantly recommend. Another thing was camping. Another thing was building. And we have a lot of people who are willing to teach this. And I come out of a family of many homeschooled children. And a lot of our kids in our family are 6, 7, and 8 grades above level because once they take these, I don't even know what to call them, I guess painful standardized tests, you know, which are very damaging to children, and teachers can't use them anyway. We get the results back a year after. You know, it's crazy. And but I recommended, you know, if I had a kid who was, as they put it, bouncing off the wall, you know, I said, well, you know, let him play baseball, you know, let him run, you know, get him a skateboard, you know, anything like that. And the parents would agree with me. I said, get him away from the TV, you know, get him, you know, on some kind of team, get him swimming, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of Ys, you know, anymore in the, you know, meaning YMCAs and stuff like that in the inner city, where kids can, in for a very small amount of money, become a member and, you know, go there and swim and, you know, play all these great games. You know, a lot of the cities are just, well, they're devoid of anything, you know, around that activity that we need for kids to, you know, really have all this energy released. So I would recommend, you know, that a couple of families get together, you know, and go to the park, you know, on the weekend. And finally, I got some of the fathers to get off their chairs, you know, and get, you know, to spend some time with the kids. Or if there was an uncle, if there was someone in the community who was willing to do, you know, a Boy Scout group and be a scoutmaster. Another thing that I constantly reminded the kids, that the kids had to, you know, just be left alone outdoors to experiment, you know, to look under rocks, to look at, you know, rotting things in the woods and, you know, let some, you know, how shall I say this, you know, those garden snakes walk all over them and, you know, some caterpillars walk all over them. But, Gary, there really is a war on boys and at a very high level in schools, and the recommendation is usually to drug them. And a lot of the kids that I finally got the parents to get out of the house, and they did so well. And, yes, you're right. We, you know, there are a lot of boring books out there. Oh, gosh, a lot of boring books. And a lot of the boys wanted to act out the books, and that's one of the things I did in my classroom. They're really natural actors, I would say, and natural dancers, you know, once you get them moving. So I hope this is helpful, but I'll tell you, got to love these boys, and that's what we've lost, and stop this stupid list of, you know, there's actually 18 major points, and one of them is looking out the window and turning around, which puts the kid on the top of a list for drugging. So I hope this has helped in some way, Gary.
Well, just hold on there for a moment, because had those same principles been applied when I was going to school, I would not just have been on Ritalin. I'd have probably been in a straitjacket hung outside the window upside down by my feet.
Yeah.
Because if there was a boring teacher, I would just go to some place in my mind and create. And I bet a lot of kids today find some teachers to be so boring and just going through the ritual of teaching but not really looking to see, are the kids learning? And if they're not, how can you make that class more interesting? How can you engage the child? Do you actually spend time with the child and ask something about the child so the child can tell you what their interests are, what their likes and not likes are? Because if there's something outside of that classroom that's more stimulating than what's in the classroom, then you're not going to have that young boy paying attention. Also, we shouldn't be demonizing all boys because of some of the excessive and stupid actions of some small percentage of boys. We forget how many boys aren't violent, how many boys are not engaged in any kind of behavior that would be considered demeaning or dehumanizing. But boys love sports. They love to be outside. They love solving problems. There's a kind of boy I call an adaptive,
yes,
assertive. They love to figure things out. They're the geeks. They may not like football or soccer or something, but you give them a puzzle, you give them a problem and say, can you solve that? And suddenly their whole brain lights up. And we have to acknowledge there's different interests in different boys. When I was growing up, there were those who didn't like athletics frequently liked shop. And there was a stigma. If you had to take shop, you were considered, a non-academic. You were considered stupid. And they weren't stupid at all. They just didn't like studying from the book as much as they like working with their hands. Now, later, many of those were my friends, and they became masters of crafts, things today that we would be very appreciative if someone were to make us a couch by hand. They could take a car apart. One of the things when I was growing up is they loved to take cars apart, the engines, and rebuild them. In fact, there was one group that ran around with my older brother, Howard, and his buddies. You could put a blindfold on them and raise the hood of a car, and they could disassemble it. They were masters, geniuses of that engine. They knew everything about it. But you ask them about football, they were clueless, never went to a basketball game. They didn't like the dancing, but there were things they liked, and that was their passion. Why can't we allow the student to share with them what their natural inclinations and passions are? Did you find that in your experience?
That, you know, and I did a lot. And one of the things that you just said about machines, some of the kids, got, out of the dump, you know, dumpsters, they picked up all these computers and they brought them in. There were like, I don't know, 12 or 13 of them. Oh, boy, did I get a lot of bad press about that, but I let them do it. They scattered these pieces all over the back of my classroom and they rebuilt all these pieces into 6 working computers. And, you know, of course, it was messy, and, you know, people thought I was, you know, just doing them a disfavor. They were being out of their chairs, you know, and they should be sitting. But you're right. This is it. You know, you got to get them building and taking things apart. I used to bring old typewriters in, and I believe it or not, I had 3 sets of encyclopedias that were all obsolete, thrown out. So they became interested in studying the Constitution, Bill of Rights. They became interested in studying the history of sports. And because they had all these great, you know, pictures. And but kids really are big muscle, especially boys. They're big muscle, big action kids. That's what I call them. And we had dancing in my room again. It was frowned upon. You know, I was constantly called to the office that I was making too much noise. And, yeah, they do. They love to roughhouse and hug each other and kind of grab each other around the neck. And, you know, I allowed this. And, you know, but there really is very little tolerance. This thing of tolerance, Gary, it's out of control. One of the boys once just grabbed one of the girls' hands, and another teacher saw it. And, I mean, all hell broke loose. Oh, that's all he did was grab her hand. And so there's a lot going on where these children are not allowed to move. So once they do move, yeah, you're right, they do go, you know, again, bonkers, and they say, oh, my gosh, they were sent outside every day. Now, this is what they were sent outside to do, to have a good time at recess, because we were one of the districts that still had, you know, recess. And they were given nothing. And I asked for equipment, and I was told that they would break it. I mean, it's insane. It's like, you know, you're damned if you do it, damned if you don't. So I went and I brought my own supplies. And, of course, they got roofed, they got lost, they got, you know, squashed, so I brought more. And I'm not a saint, but you know what? I like kids. And I resented that, you know, I didn't have the support. You know, I didn't mind ever bringing this, you know, out of my pocket. My husband and I would actually buy, you know, these kids all this equipment. But you can't send, you know, a couple of hundred kids outside at recess and give them nothing. They're going to start kicking each other, and they're going to start bumping each other's heads because they have nothing to do. And structurally, you know, there are very few areas in districts where they will organize games, you know, for the kids at recess or, you know, at lunchtime. So the kids fight, and then they get detention, DSP, which is stupid because they get 3 days to hang out in the neighborhood and get into real trouble, you know, instead of doing something constructive. So even that works against the boys, Gary. They're giving the so-called, you know, denied school privileges, you know, for 3 days. They love it. So they do it on purpose, then they hit people on the head so they can be DSP'd, you know, hang out at home, play video games, or go in the community and get into serious trouble during the day. But again, I have to go back to homeschooling because I really believe in it. And I have daughters that have established centers for their kids because, you know, they have, you know, over 500 families in one of them, and they get together 2 times a week to do all these great outdoor activities. And it's a lot of fun. And the boys, we don't want them in school, Gary, because we're really afraid that they will drug them. We'll really be afraid that they just won't let them look under those rocks and grab those, you know, insects and look at them and, you know, be curious about mud and be very dirty every day. That's another thing, by the way. It's forbidden to get dirty. And from what I hear, that the kind of boy that you were and your siblings, you know, boys love to get dirty. And quite frankly,
we wrestle. every day we'd wrestle. And we'd play dodgeball. You got to let kids play dodgeball. Or you got school. I was a scoutmaster. I was a scout troop 24. I was life scout, and I wanted to get other kids to become Eagle Scouts. Scouting is one of the greatest ways of allowing a boy to express who they are, but at the same time, give them principles of community, give them principles of discipline. And we don't have that today. And let them choose their sport. Let them choose something that stimulates them at their authentic level. You can't just put a bunch of kids together and not allow them to have any say-so because they're going to resent the environment they're in and the teachers who are there. And good for you for being that teacher who loved and cared about the people, your kids. I'm sure that you also allowed them to understand how to question you, question the course, question the curriculum, question to create the next generation of critical thinkers. Yeah?
Uh-huh. Yes.
How many teachers?
You know what? But But they don't, they have to be listened to. If they question, then, you know, those people, those adults have to say, okay, let them talk, and now let's listen. And let's implement, you know, what they're talking about. And, you know, it makes for a kid that is not going to get into trouble, Gary, is not going to vandalize a school. In fact, you know, my real dream was that kids would want to break into the school to have fun and experiment and, you know, explore. Not, you know, break out of the school to vandalize and hurt each other, and this is what the outcome is.
All kids are tempted at some point to rebel against the authority figures in our life. That's just a normal part of our evolution to separate ourselves from the control others have had to define who we are. Now, we never do it perfectly, and there's always a whole lot of mistakes, but that's a part of being a kid. And you have to separate when a kid acts out from what they're really trying to say to you when they're acting out. You have to be more humanistic and pull back and not personalize it and say that somehow the kid is an affront to you or a threat to the class. When I was growing up, and I'll conclude with this, I saw a lot of kids acting out. And I saw kids doing things that were stupid. We all did things that were stupid. But I never remember one of those kids getting arrested. Now, I know that for a fact because the chief of police in my hometown was my godfather. And he refused to arrest kids for acting out and being stupid, because his kids acted out and were stupid, and he did. And that was the way I grew up. So he didn't punish people. He simply would tell you, think about what you're doing. Now, if you did that, you broke something, you just said, go repair it. And it was over. You learned a lesson, and that was it. But you suddenly weren't made to feel that somehow you were irreparably damaged and you were an offense and a threat to the community or anyone else. So we were allowed to evolve. We didn't have preschool and kindergarten. We had school up until 6 years of age in first grade. You explored life. You went out every morning. Your mom didn't know where you went. You came back. You might have been bruised, scratched, cut or something. That was fixed. You had your lunch and you went back out again. She didn't know where you were until you came back. And then you played kick the can at night. You did the things that allowed you to evolve. We don't have environments for kids in the general population to evolve, and now with zero tolerance, they're not given a chance to make that mistake. They're not given a chance to evolve. They're supposed to be perfect little creatures, and in effect, what we have today is the need for little kids to become little adults, and hence bypass what it means to be a human evolving. I thank you very much for your call. You gave us a lot of good insights. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're out of time. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now you have a good day.